You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, July 26, 2016. We dig into the city of Bloomington's long-term plans for transportation later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, the ins and outs of money, our weekly segment providing economic education and community resources that keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing. But first, these local headlines.
A group of Indiana Republicans chose Eric Holcomb to run for governor during a private meeting today. Holcomb has been the lieutenant governor since he was appointed to the position in March. In the gubernatorial race, Holcomb replaces Mike Pence, who was forced to bow out after he announced he would run for vice president alongside Donald Trump. Although Holcomb has been active in Republican politics for many years, he has never held an elected position. He considered running for Senate this year, but then dropped out of the race in February. Holcomb has only officially run for office one time. That was in the year 2000 when he ran for a spot in the Indiana House of Representatives. He lost that race to the incumbent Democrat John Friends after a very expensive and aggressive race. WFHB News Director Joe Crawford spoke with Friends earlier today about his experience running against Holcomb.
As the only person who's actually run against him in the past, do you have any sort of insight into Eric Holcomb as a political candidate?
He was good at fundraising, and they did launch early, attack ads against me and kept them rolling right up until the election day. And I was lucky that the voters saw my side of the story and got reelected.
And I know that it was a very expensive race, is that right?
Right, yeah. I got listed in the Washington Post in the top 10 elections that year, state elections that year. I don't remember the exact amounts, but, it was probably close to $200,000 that spent on that campaign.
I was just looking through an old newspaper article. This is from 2000. It said, Holcomb has accused Friends in the newspaper ad of supporting the use of taxpayer money to collect pornography and conduct studies on bestiality, homosexuality, and pedophilia. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was ran on the weekend before the election. He ran those ads in the local newspapers in the district. They're basically about half-page ads. It went on through and just said that I supported those, bestiality and all the things you just read there. But then when you read the details, his basis was because I had voted for House Bill 1001. And House Bill 1001 is the budget. And in the budget was finance for Indiana University. And because an Indiana University is a Kinsey Institute library where those documents or those research are stored at, he just sort of twisted that to say, therefore, I financially supported bestiality, pedophiles, homosexuality, and things like that. I don't think the people took that ad serious. It didn't help them at the polling. But, there was a lot of teasing that I got after that on that issue.
That was former State Representative John Friend speaking about his experience running against Eric Holcomb for a position in the Indiana House of Representatives 16 years ago. Indiana Republicans announced today that Holcomb would be their nominee for governor, replacing Mike Pence on the ballot. Holcomb will face Democratic nominee John Gregg in November.
The Hemlock Cliffs Trail area in Bedford has recently been closed to camping. A press release from the U.S. Forest Service states that camping is not allowed on any trail along or adjacent to the Hemlock Cliffs Trail area. Tina Lickman from the Hoosier National Forest says that the ban was needed because the trails were being vandalized.
We were getting complaints from other hikers that was interfering with their experience because it is just an amazingly beautiful place. And then, you know, they would go down there on the weekend and here were all these tents set up all through that gorgeous ravine. And so it was damaging because there are a lot of plants down there too that grow specifically in that place and they're not found anywhere else because it has steep sides and it has hemlock and a lot of wintergreen, things that you don't find a lot of other places. And so here were all of these people camping and building campfires in this really special place. It wasn't appropriate. So it's a day-use place, and if people just, and we want people to come and see it because it is so beautiful. So if they just come for the day and hike the trail and look at the rock shelter and if there's water, the waterfall is there. It's just, it's gorgeous. But there are other places that are more appropriate to camp.
Lickman says the trails are limited to day use only to protect the wildlife as well as the trails, but she says that there are many other campsites in the surrounding area that Hoosiers can use.
Close by we have Indian Salina Campground and Tipsaw, and they're both developed campgrounds that have warm showers, and Tipsaw has a beach, and just the really nice campgrounds. But you can also camp along roadsides, other places that are free. If you know you're on the Hoosier National Forest, and we have maps that people can buy that show our ownership, and those are free. They're, you know, primitive, but that's available as well. Hemlock Cliffs we just want to have for day use.
Patrols of the Hemlock Cliffs area will be increased in order to protect the site. A $100 fine will be issued to anyone who violates the camping ban.
In a meeting earlier this month, the Monroe County Council okayed the county commissioners using bond money to fund a wide range of projects, including the purchases of new financial systems software for the auditor's office. Security cameras for county buildings and a sport utility vehicle for the sheriff's office were also included in the request. Marty Hawk was the only county council member voting no.
As I've tried to make it very clear, I've not been happy, as many of us have been discouraged, about the fact that the commissioners moved forward and tied up so much of our CUMCAP money to pay for a parking garage, and they made it clear they didn't need council's support or approval, and thereby using so much of that CUMCAP money for that rather than being able to use it for some of these other things. I know it's only just a small way to say I'm not pleased with that action, but I think that there's times that we have to just step forward and say we think some of the things that's happened just wasn't right, and that's the reason for my vote.
CUMCAP is short for Cumulative Capital Fund, which the county commissioners used to build a parking garage on North Morton Street.
The Hoosier Hills Food Bank continues to serve our neighbors in need with their fourth annual Dream Big Food Drive at the Monroe County Fair. Today, fair guests can bring non-perishable food donations and get a free ride ticket for every four items donated. Food Bank staff will collect the donations at the tent between the animal barns and the auditorium. Discounted state fair admission tickets will also be available for donation. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. The city's Growth Policies Plan, also known as the GPP, or the Comp Plan, covers a broad range of topics such as land use, housing, environmental protection, and transportation, among other issues. The GPP is the guiding document for the city in setting policies and ordinances. Sarah Vaughn spoke with Planning and Transportation Director Christy Langley about the portion of the Growth Policies Plan that deals with transportation.
This is Sarah Vaughn reporting for WFHB. I'm speaking with Christy Langley, Director of Planning and Transportation for the City of Bloomington. Christy, can you explain to us the comprehensive plan, which is also known as a growth policies plan? Can you explain for our listeners the purpose of that document?
Indiana state statute provides the ability for local municipalities or counties to have planning and zoning authority. But in order to exercise that planning and zoning authority, they have to have a comprehensive master plan. And so it outlines in the state statute exactly what has to be in there, whether it's capital improvement plan, a thoroughfare master plan, that kind of stuff. And so It does not say in the state statute how often they need to be updated, but typically from an industry perspective, it's every 5 to 10 years, depending on how fast your community is growing. So the previous document, which was called the GPP, the Growth Policies Plan, was updated in 2002, so we're a little behind. One of the main goals of this plan is quality of life, and so we sat around and said, what does quality of life mean, right? People kind of throw it around. And we decided that quality of life means an increase in your number of choices. And then you can apply that to whatever, whether it's education, whether it's employment, whether it's transportation. And so a high quality of life, no matter what your income is, means a high level of choice. And transportation is one of those sections.
The Growth Policies Plan covers a very broad range of topics, such as land use, housing, historic preservation, environmental protection, sustainability, and transportation, which is what I'd like to talk with you about today. I read on the city's website that thanks to the Bikeways Implementation Plan, the city's bike path network now covers more than 69 miles. Are there plans to expand bike paths even more?
Bloomington already has a rich history of being very multimodal. What the transportation section says in the current draft of the comp plan is not just to encourage more diversity in the modes of transportation through development and then redoing existing transportation routes and enhancing those, but also is to update our thoroughfare master plan. So our thoroughfare plan basically dictates what capital improvements we're going to do for the next 5 to 10 years. What's interesting in the state of Indiana, at least, is that thoroughfare plans are typically very vehicularly oriented. What we would like to do is, when we update the thoroughfare plan in 2017, is to marry the thoroughfare plan update with the greenways plan so that they are on the same level. We don't want those documents separated. We want them together and married and talking to each other. And so that will also help enhance the industry standards and local development standards of some of our roadways and development. So that's kind of the plan moving forward in the next 12 to 18 months.
And what informs your decision about how much and where to expand bicycle routes? Are there any studies being done? Is the purpose for recreation or to help people get to work?
One of the primary purposes is to add choices to transportation. So not just transit, but if I want to ride my bike to work or to the grocery store or what have you, we want you to be able to do that safely. And so that's the primary component, even though recreation is a component too, because it's actually a positive externality of making those bikeways safe for true transportation development. What dictates that decision is a myriad of things, public feedback and plans like this and the Greenways plan, and then just everyday conversation with our citizens. So we do keep an inventory when people call and say, hey, I ride my bike from point A to point B and it's just not safe. And so what can you guys do to help improve that? So the more comments we get such as that, even outside of the planning process, we make note and those go into our planning conversations with administration.
Can we expect more sidewalk expansion and in what parts of the city might we see that?
Some people prefer multi-purpose paths and trails to sidewalks because sidewalks are typically, you know, even 3 foot in width and they don't accommodate much but the individual pedestrian. And then also they're very difficult to retrofit into areas that do not have any currently. And you have to do property acquisition. You have to deal with a lot of utilities that are in the areas that you're actually putting the sidewalks in. There's a sidewalk committee and they have funding out of one of our budget lines every year to do those sidewalk projects. And so usually that is initiated by residents calling and saying, hey, this is what we want. The sidewalk committee meets and decides whether that has enough priority to be one of our funding areas for that year. But sidewalks in general are probably a little bit more of an archaic transportation system. And so we say, look, pedestrians are important, but we want to plan for more than just pedestrians so that they can walk in the same areas that people are biking or running or what have you. One of the things we're working with administration right now is how we prioritize those paths and those requests. And so those are some of the things that we need to look at about there not being additional alternative transportation options there. How much traffic, pedestrian traffic, is there typically? How many requests have we had in the past, et cetera? So we do need to do a better job of prioritizing those, and we're getting with administration the next couple months to analyze that because most of our project funds are through the TIF, the Tax Increment Financing District, and because the mayor wants to be very particular on what we spend the TIF dollars on, he wants to be very particular on how we choose those projects.
And what about bus service? I've noticed there are gaps in the coverage. Are there plans to expand the bus service?
Lou May, who heads up Bloomington Transit is technically not part of the city of Bloomington proper, but he does communicate and come to our meetings and all that. So one of those meetings is for me and him and probably our director of engineering, Andrew Seabor, to get together and talk about some of those gaps so that we can at least put policy language in the plan that supports them. We don't have a lot of local control because they're primarily controlled by their board, even though we do fund them. But they've always been very collaborative in their conversations, so we want to continue that collaboration through the narrative and the document.
How does the GPP intersect with the Bloomington-Monroe County Metropolitan Planning Organization's 2030 long-range transportation plan?
Probably the Thoroughfare Master Plan will integrate more with the county's Transportation Master Plan, but what we are looking at is how it coordinates with the county's Urban Area Plan. So that's something that they're working on updating right now. So if you're familiar with the Urban Area Plan, this is where the county is looking at some of the areas on our municipal border fringe, which are very urban in context, and how those land use should progress, especially with I-69 becoming a reality. And then we have to talk about our fringe as well and how it meshes with those land uses and how we intend to grow or not grow in the transportation intersection.
Do you feel that transportation will be an important issue in those discussions as the city and the county both grow?
Yep, I think it's paramount. It was paramount beforehand, but now with I-69 and its presence, I think it's going to be even more important. A majority of that exchange is in the county currently, and so we also have to talk about, and have in the past, but also those multimodal intersections, so not just vehicular, but how can we connect our bike paths and our walking trails and et cetera.
When's the next opportunity for the public to give input on the new GPP?
Where they're going to get the biggest bang for their buck from a time perspective is the town halls that we're having. Our first one is Wednesday, August 3rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Monroe County Public Library. So that's where we're going to have an extensive overview. We're going to have staff there with our board so you can talk individually and dialogue about what we missed, what we underemphasized, what we overemphasized, that kind of stuff.
Thank you, Christy, for your time. This is Sarah Vaughn for WFHB. I've been speaking with Christy Langley, the Director of Planning and Transportation for the City of Bloomington.
That was Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn speaking with Planning and Transportation Director Christy Langley about the transportation portion of the Growth Policies Plan, also called the 2040 Comprehensive Plan. The public can review the plan online at bloomington.in.gov/CMP.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly financial segment, The Ins and Outs of Money.
Welcome to The Ins and Outs of Money, connecting you with community resources that help you keep your budget balanced and your finances flourishing.
Welcome back to The Ins and Outs of Money. I'm Ryan Stacey with the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. And today we're going to talk about something you might not consider when you think about your money, and that is the legal aspects of personal finance, where your money might meet the law. And with us today to talk about that is Jamie Andry. Jamie, you are an attorney at Indiana Legal Services here in Bloomington.
That's right, Ryan.
And what is it they do and what do you do there?
Indiana Legal Services provides free legal help to low-income people who are facing a wide range of civil problems. In my case, most of my cases are tax-related. We help people who have problems with IRS and the Indiana Department of Revenue. And I also handle a wide variety of other collection cases. But some of our lawyers handle housing cases, we defend evictions and foreclosures, and we also handle family law cases and public benefits.
So where a lot of people might think of a lawyer and they think of either criminal cases or civil actions like lawsuits, you actually do see a lot of things related to people's money and people's finances.
We see a huge number of things related to people's money. In fact, most of what we do involves money in some way or another.
And so you mentioned that you talk to people about evictions or foreclosures, collections, that sort of thing. And obviously you're not able to give specific legal advice on our show, but in general, what is a good general course of action for somebody who might be facing collections on a bad debt or a possible eviction or a foreclosure to protect themselves?
Unfortunately, when a lawsuit arises because of non-payment of rent or a bill, it's often because the person simply can't afford to pay despite their best efforts. However, there might be some programs out there that can help people pay.
Okay.
Perhaps the township trustee could provide assistance, or there are certain federal programs that help distressed homeowners. Someone may be able to modify their home loan.
And how would they do that?
Well, they need to work with the lender, and they actually need to request a modification of their home loan.
And so it sounds like what you're saying is before you would maybe put yourself in the position of being sued for non-payment of a credit card debt, say, or a non-payment of rent, you would do well to try to negotiate with people. Is that as daunting or as difficult as it seems like it would be?
Well, it really depends on the creditor. Usually working with the creditor early before you're very far behind will help. In the case of something like student loans, there might be forbearance programs that are available. There are actually a lot of ways to deal with student loans if you're having problems paying them.
Not everybody can afford an attorney. What can somebody do who might need legal advice of different kinds, but maybe they can't afford an attorney?
Well, here in Bloomington, there are a variety of options available. There's Indiana Legal Services, and as I stated earlier, we provide free legal help to people with civil problems if those folks are below 200% of the federal poverty level. There's also the District 10 Pro Bono Project. They use volunteer lawyers to provide legal assistance in civil cases. And then there's a great project of the District 10 Pro Bono Project called Counsel in the Courts. That provides limited legal assistance to people who either have family law problems or consumer collection problems. And they're in the courthouse on Friday mornings for family law cases and from 1:30 to 3 for collection cases. And they can give people advice. They can help them fill out certain sorts of forms. That's a really great service here in Monroe County.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about today, Jamie, and I'm glad you could stop by. Jamie Andre is with Indiana Legal Services here in Bloomington. I appreciate you stopping by to talk to us.
Well, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Thank you.
The Ins and Outs of Money is part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. It's produced by Ryan Stacey. Executive producer is Allison Bechtesh. Tools for taking control of your money are at the library's It's Your Money webpage at money.mcpl.info. That's money.mcpl, as in Monroe County Public Library.info.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Casey Ross, Joe Crawford, and Kathy Norton. Along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services, our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
The Ins and Outs of Money is produced by Ryan Stacey and associate producer Christina Wiltsey. It's part of the It's Your Money Project at Monroe County Public Library. Our engineer is Matt Griffin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington's community radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.